In our modern world, we are used to a penal system which is relatively straightforward. In the days of Jesus, that was far from the case. In Mark chapter 15, verse 1, we read the chief priest with the elders, the teachers of the law, and the whole Sanhedrin reached a decision, after which Jesus was delivered to Pilate. The whole council refers to the Sanhedrin, the ruling body of the Jews, who had considerable authority over the Jews in both theological and civil matters, although in the time of Jesus, the authority to enforce capital punishment had been denied them by the Roman authorities, which is why the council brought Jesus to Pilate. They wanted him dead. So, as the Sanhedrin didn't have the authority to carry out a capital sentence, the appearance of Jesus before it must have been a sort of informal hearing. The Sanhedrin were really playing the role of prosecutor before Pilate. They all accused him of A, seditious agitation, B, with encouraging men not to pay tribute to Caesar, and C, with assuming the title of king. All parts of their accusation were lies, and they well knew it. Just a casual study of the ministry of Jesus would disprove such charges. When Pilate asked Jesus if he is king of the Jews, he's really asking, are you a revolutionary seeking to establish an independent Jewish state? When Jesus answers, you've said I am, he's telling Pilate that he understands. Pilate is using the term with its political implication. In other words, you said that, not me. All the Gospels portray Pilate as an unwilling tool of Jesus's Jewish enemies, but none so clearly as Luke makes the case. They said Jesus had been an agitator from Galilee to Jerusalem, that is, from the outer limits to the centre of Palestine. Pilate's ears must have pricked up on hearing Galilee, because this was under Herod's jurisdiction, so he welcomed a way out and didn't hesitate to send him before Herod, who was delighted to meet Jesus. He'd heard about Jesus and was looking forward to seeing at least one miracle. Being disappointed that Jesus wouldn't oblige, Herod and his soldiers treated him with contempt and mocked him. But here, at this point in the narrative, we read such a significant sentence, and Herod and Pilate became friends with each other that very day. Allow me to spend a few moments on this verse. The bad feeling between Herod and Pilate could be a reference to the Galileans, the subjects of Herod, whom Pilate had slain whilst they were sacrificing at Jerusalem, which Herod might have resented. Herod might well have considered it to be an infringement upon his authority and power. Had they been deserving of punishment, it ought to have been left to him to have inflicted it, and not the governor of Judea, who had nothing to do with them. Now matters were made up by this step of Pilate's in sending Jesus to him. When Pilate heard that Jesus came from the region of Galilee and therefore would come under Herod's jurisdiction, which was really acknowledging his previous conduct had been wrong, Pilate was now showing a regard for Herod's authority, and so they were reconciled together and agreed in their contempt and ill-treatment of Jesus. There's an old proverb which says, the enemy of my enemy is my friend. It's often surprising how two people who have little in common can join in opposing someone they equally dislike or who is preventing them from doing what they have their hearts set on doing. As a Christian, If you've ever worked somewhere where the slightest attempt to witness for the Lord has met with a contemptuous reaction from people who seem to have little in common with each other, except ridiculing your stand, then you will have first-hand knowledge of this verse. The combined contempt of Herod and Pilate for Jesus made the aims of the Jews all the more easy. Pilate was trying to cover his previous faux pas, and Jesus wasn't living up to Herod's expectation of what he'd heard about Jesus. In today's world, everyone and their brother seems to have an opinion about what God should be doing about the various catastrophes, and when God won't do what they think he should do, they either dismiss the idea of there being a God at all, or they say he's not a God who has his finger on the pulse. They join together in their combined wisdom and form the opposition to the Christian. It's one of the greatest hurdles the church faces, and in many places the numbers attending the church are declining. It's not that Christians are no longer believing in God, it's that the non-believers band together to discredit the Christian witness. There are an awful lot of people who resent any suggestion which they think infringes on their right to do what they like. And such is the strength of their view that they don't mind agreeing with people who sometimes have otherwise very strange ideas. Because of the combined refusal to believe in Jesus, the Christian can often feel so overwhelmed by the dismissal of their witness that they are reluctant to present the gospel. Indeed, would I be exaggerating in saying that many who for themselves claim Jesus as Lord rarely witness to his saving grace to anyone who isn't a Christian? Instead, tolerance is extended to the non-Christians on the basis of live and let live. Well, while tolerance is an admirable quality in Christians, as it is indeed for everyone, to be prevented from witnessing by the possibility of being ridiculed at our witness is a confession that we may fear that the strength of opposition to our belief holds greater power than our witness. May I express the opinion that our churches are declining in numbers for the simple reason that Christians don't have the confidence to talk to non-Christians about Jesus. It can be that we are more than happy to talk about the non-Christian's favourite subject, but we're reluctant to engage them on our ground. Romans chapter 10 verse 14 puts it very clearly when it says, "How then can they call on the one they have not believed in? And how can they believe in the one of whom they have not heard? And how can they hear without someone preaching to them?" There has never been a more urgent time to talk about Jesus to those who do not know him. We cannot take for granted that churches will continue to exist if church members do not talk about Jesus to those who are not Christians. I have the greatest admiration and respect for the lovely Christians who attend worship every week in their churches. I know so many who live good lives, yet it would seem so many are hesitant to tell those who aren't churchgoers about their faith. Would you mind the directness of this statement if I said that we must be both concerned and willing to address the diminishing number of church members and empty church buildings? If we don't, the question must be, who then will? So may I presume to give a challenge to all who are kind enough to be listening to my thoughts. Would you share the Bible account of the death and resurrection of Jesus with someone who doesn't go to church, please? I accept that your family and neighbours may not be willing to listen to a 30-minute sermon, but would you just share with them what Jesus means to you, for what he did for you on the cross at Calvary? Please. If you would like to let me know what response you get, I will ask the members of the Vale Ministries prayer group to pray for those to whom you have witnessed. Please don't let the Pilates and the Herods combine to rob our world of the witness of all Jesus means to us. May God empower and bless you as you witness for him.